Chapter 15. An election, and a reward in the end, and it is evident to any man who knows the world, or has made any observations on things, what an improvement the English nation has made during this 7 years' war. But should you ask how clear it first cost, and what a condition England was in for a war at first on this account, how almost all our engineers and great officers were foreigners, it may put us in mind, how necessary it is to have our people, so practiced in the arts of war, that they may not be novices, when they come to the experiment. I have heard some who were no great friends to the government take advantage to reflect upon the king, in the beginning of his wars in Ireland, that he did not care to trust the English, but all his great officers, his generals, and engineers were foreigners. And though the case was so plain, as to need no answer, and the person such as deserved none, yet this must be observed, though it was very strange, that when the present king took possession of this kingdom, and, seeing himself entering upon the bloodiest war this age has known, began to regulate his army, he found but very few among the whole martial part of the nation fit to make use of for general officers, and was forced to employ strangers, and make them Englishmen, as the Counts Schomberg, Ginkle, Solmes, Ruvigny, and others, and yet it is to be observed also that all the encouragement imaginable was given to the English gentlemen to qualify themselves, by giving no less than 16 regiments to gentlemen of good families who had never been in any service, and knew but very little how to command them. Of these, several are now in the army, and have the reward suitable to their merit, being major generals, brigadiers, and the like. If, then, a long peace had so reduced us to a degree of ignorance, that might have been dangerous to us, had we not a king who is always followed by the greatest masters in the world, who knows what peace and different governors may bring us to again. The manner of making war differs perhaps as much as anything in the world, and if we look no further back than our civil wars, it is plain a general then would hardly be fit to be a colonel now, saving his capacity of improvement. The defensive art always follows the offensive, and though the latter has extremely got the start of the former in this age, yet the other is mightily improving also. We saw in England a bloody civil war, where, according to the old temper of the English, fighting was the business. To have an army lying in such a post as not to be able to come at them was a thing never heard of in that war. Even the weakest party would always come out and fight Dunbar fight, for instance, and they that were beaten today would fight again tomorrow, and seek one another out with such eagerness, as if they had been in haste, to have their brains knocked out. Encampments, entrenchments, batteries, counter-marchings, fortifying of camps, and cannonadings were strange, and almost unknown things, and whole campaigns were passed over, and hardly any tents made use of. Battles, surprises, storming of towns, skirmishes, sieges, ambuscades, and beating up quarters, was the news of every day. Now it is frequent to have armies of 50,000 men of a side stand at bay within view of one another, and spend a whole campaign in dodging or, as it is genteelly called, observing one another, and then march off into winter quarters. The differences in the maxims of war, which now differ as much from what they were formerly as long perukes do from peaked beards, or as the habits of the people do now from what they then were. The present maxims of the war are: never fight without a manifest advantage, and always encamp so as not to be forced to it. And if two opposite generals nicely observe both these rules, it is impossible they should ever come to fight. I grant that this way of making war spends generally more money and less blood than former wars did, but then it spins wars out to a greater length. And I almost question whether, if this had been the way of fighting of old, our civil war had not lasted till this day. Their maxim was, wherever you meet your enemy, fight him. But the case is quite different now, and I think it is plain in the present war, that it is not he who has the longest sword, so much as he who has the longest purse, will hold the war out best. Europe is all engaged in the war, and the men will never be exhausted while either party can find money. But he who finds himself poorest must give out first, and this is evident in the French king, who now inclines to peace, and owns it, while at the same time his armies are numerous and whole. But the sinews fail, he finds his exchequer fail, his kingdom drained, and money hard to come at. Not that I believe half the reports we have had of the misery and poverty of the French are true, but it is manifest the King of France finds, whatever his armies may do, his money won't hold out so long as the Confederates, and therefore he uses all the means possible to procure a peace, while he may do it with the most advantage. There is no question, but the French may hold the war out several years longer. But their king is too wise to let things run to extremity. He will rather condescend to peace upon hard terms now than stay longer, if he finds himself in danger to be forced to worse. This being the only digression I design to be guilty of, I hope I shall be excused it. The sum of all is this, that, since it is so necessary to be in a condition for war in a time of peace, our people should be inured to it. It is strange that everything should be ready but the soldier. Ships are ready, and our trade keeps the seamen always taut, and breeds up more, but soldiers, horsemen, engineers, gunners, and the like must be bred and taught. Men are not born with muskets on their shoulders, nor fortifications in their heads. It is not natural to shoot bombs and undermine towns. For which purpose I propose a Royal Academy for Military Exercises. The founder, the king himself, the charge to be paid by the public, unsettled by a revenue from the crown, to be paid yearly. I propose this to consist of four parts. 1. A college for breeding up of artists in the useful practice of all military exercises. The scholars to be taken in young, and be maintained, and afterwards under the king's care for preferment, as their merit and his majesty's favor shall recommend them, from whence his majesty would at all times be furnished with able engineers, gunners, fire masters, bombardiers, miners, and the like. The second college for voluntary students in the same exercises, who should all upon certain limited conditions be entertained, and have all the advantages of the lectures, experiments, and learning of the college, and be also capable of several titles, profits, and settlements in the said college, answerable to the fellows in the universities. The third college for temporary study, into which any person who is a gentleman and an Englishman, entering his name and conforming to the orders of the house, shall be entertained like a gentleman for one whole year gratis, and taught by masters appointed out of the second college. The fourth college, of schools only, where all persons whatsoever for a small allowance shall be taught, and entered in all the particular exercises they desire, and this to be supplied by the proficients of the first college. I could lay out the dimensions and necessary incidents of all this work, but since the method of such a foundation is easy and regular from the model of other colleges, I shall only state the economy of the house. The building must be very large, and should rather be stately and magnificent in figure than gay and costly in ornament. And I think such a house as Chelsea College, only about four times as big, would answer it, and yet, I believe, might be finished for as little charge as has been laid out in that palace-like hospital. The first college should consist of one general, five colonels, 20 captains. Being such as graduates by preferment, at first named by the founder, and after the first settlement, to be chosen out of the first or second colleges, with apartments in the college, and salaries. Pounds per annum. The general. .300 the colonels. .100 the captains. .60, 2,000 scholars, among whom shall be the following degrees. Pounds per annum. Governors. .100 allowed 10 directors. .205 exempts. .205 proficients. .500 juniors. .1000 the general, to be named by the founder, out of the colonels. The colonels to be named by the general, out of the captains. The captains out of the governors. The governors from the directors. And the directors from the exempts. And so on. The juniors to be divided into 10 schools. The schools to be thus governed. Every school has 100 juniors in 10 classes. Every class to have 2 directors. 100 classes of juniors is .1000 each class 2 directors. .200 equals 1200 the proficients to be divided into 5 schools. Every school to have 10 classes of 10 each. Every class 2 governors. 50 classes of proficiencies. .500 each class 2 governors is. .100 equals 600 the exempts to be supernumerary, having a small allowance, and maintained in the college till preferment offer. The second college to consist of voluntary students, to be taken in, after a certain degree of learning, from among the proficients of the first, or from any other schools, after such and such limitations of learning, who study at their own charge, being allowed certain privileges, as chambers rent free on condition of residence, commons gratis, for certain fixed terms, preferment, on condition of a term of year's residence, use of libraries, instruments, and lectures of the college. This college should have the following preferments, with salaries, pounds per annum. A governor. .200 a president. .150 college majors. .5200 proficients. .10500 voluntary students, without allowance. The third and fourth colleges, consisting only of schools for temporary study, may be thus. The third being for gentlemen, to learn the necessary arts and exercises to qualify them for the service of their country, and entertaining them one whole year at the public charge, may be supposed to have always 1,000 persons on its hands, and cannot have less than 100 teachers, whom I would thus order. Every teacher shall continue at least 1 year, but by allowance 2 years at most, shall have £20 per annum extraordinary allowance, shall be bound to give their constant attendance, and shall have always 5 college majors of the second college to supervise them, who shall command a month, and then be succeeded by 5 others, and so on £10 per annum extraordinary to be paid them for their attendance. The gentlemen who practice to be put to no manner of charge, but to be obliged strictly to the following articles. 1. To constant residence, not to lie out of the house without leave of the college major. 2. To perform all the college exercises, as appointed by the masters, without dispute. 3. To submit to the orders of the house. To quarrel or give ill language should be a crime, to be punished by way of fine only, the college major to be judge, and the offender be put into custody till he ask pardon of the person wronged. By which means every gentleman who has been affronted has sufficient satisfaction. But to strike, challenge, draw, or fight, should be more severely punished, the offender to be declared no gentleman, his name posted up at the college gate, his person expelled the house, and to be pumped as a rake, if ever he is taken within the college walls. The teachers of this college to be chosen, one half out of the exempts of the first college, and the other out of the proficients of the second. The fourth college, being only of schools, will be neither chargeable nor troublesome, but may consist of as many as shall offer themselves to be taught, and supplied with teachers from the other schools. The proposal, being of so large an extent, must have a proportionable settlement for its maintenance, and the benefit being to the whole kingdom, the charge will naturally lie upon the public, and cannot well be less, considering the number of persons to be maintained, than as follows. First College, pounds per annum. The General. .305 colonels at £100 per annum each. .520 captains at 60. .1200 governors at 10. .1200 directors at 5. .1200 exempts at 5. .1000-2000 heads for subsistence, at £20 per head per annum, comma including provision, and all the officers' salaries in the house, as butlers, cooks, purveyors, nurses, maids, laundresses, stewards, clerks, servants, chaplains, porters, and attendants, which are numerous. 40,000, Second College. Gutenberg Edition. End of chapter.